Hello, welcome to the Girl and Duck podcast. I'm Jen Storer, acclaimed children's book author and chief inspirationalist. That's not a term I made up. At girlandduck.com, creative writing, creative life. At Girl and Duck, I take you on a journey from exploring the art of kidlit creation right through to mastering the art of kidlit creation. To find out more about the courses and products that I offer, pop over to the website. You're bound to find inspiration and support and something to absolutely love over there. That's www.girlandduck.com. But in the meantime, stick around because we've got lots to talk about. I am so organized today. I've even got notes. Well, they're notes scribbled on... The notes scribbled on notes, you know, notes from something else, another project, but at least I have notes, something to guide my thoughts. How are you, dear listener? I hope you're well. I've just come in from a walk. It is an extraordinary day here, absolutely beautiful. You know, these high, wide blue skies, the sun's shining, the wind is blowing, you still need a coat and fingerless gloves and a scarf. But apart from that, it is a glorious, glorious day. So I'm feeling pretty, pretty happy with life at the moment. And, you know, the blossoms popping through and the daffodils are opening and it's just beautiful. I just love coming out of winter, you know, seeing things coming to life and all that sort of stuff. It's lovely. Now, what I want to talk to you about today is some stuff. So this morning we had office hours in the duck pond, and that's always an amazing time for me, you know, to talk to people and to, you know, hear what people's concerns are and what's going on and think about things. And then, you know, it helps me with the podcast too, because I can get ideas about stuff that I want to talk to you about. So I'm going to mention a couple of things first and then kind of... Well, it'll all be the usual sort of thing. It'll all sort of just feed and flow into itself. But so what did I want to say first? So someone in the duck pond this morning asked a question, which is a question I've had many times over the years, and I love this question because it's really important that we talk about this. And this is particularly for picture book authors. Now, she was talking about how she had worked really hard on her picture book and got it to, you know, the best that she could get it. And then she submitted it and it's been accepted for publication with a really lovely publisher. And as soon as it went into the process, it got changed. Okay, there was all these changes that had to be made. And she was not at all upset about that. But what she was saying was, if this is the process, if this is what happens, how much work should we put into a PB manuscript before we submit it, knowing that it's just going to all change anyway when it gets in there? Okay, which is a great question. And again, I've been asked this many, many times over the years. And I always sort of say the same thing. It's not about that. It's not about the changes that are going to happen once the manuscript goes into production. It's about you showing the publisher that you care. Okay? It's about you putting in the effort to submit your best. All right? Because what the publisher is looking for is not a finished product, but they're looking for skill, they're looking for talent, they're looking for commitment. Now, I say this also, it's coming from a position of having worked, you know, in-house in publishing, as an editor and as project manager, and seeing some of the absolute rubbish. And I know, dear listener, you would not be one of these people because you wouldn't be listening to this if you were, but the absolute rubbish that the great unwashed submit to children's publishers, all right? Because there is that myth out there that says it's for kids and therefore I can just dash something off and submit it. All right. And that just is it's the majority of the submissions of the unsolicited manuscripts that come into a children's publisher are, you know, I'm being harsh here, but they're rubbish. And they're not rubbish because the poor old person's deluded. They're rubbish because the person hasn't put in the effort. They don't care. Like, they haven't gone to any trouble to learn about this art form. Don't get me started. All right, I can go straight back to the rage that I used to feel in some in when I'd pick up submissions that were so sloppy and so lazy and so disrespectful of our industry. You know, it pisses me off. You know, this is a multi-million whatever dollar industry full of passionate people who care very deeply about the art form. So why does someone think that they can dash off a picture book on a weekend, some crappy old thing that they haven't put any thought or care into, send it to a publisher and expect a publisher to jump up and down and clap their hands? No, that's not going to happen. All right, so it comes back to give them your best. Always give them your best. But within that, of course, there is that caveat, don't overwork it. And the only way that you can, you know, get to a point where you understand that you're overworking something is through experience. I mean, we can't know everything straight off the bat. We can't know everything with our first manuscript. We have to cut ourselves some slack. And there will be manuscripts that you overwork. There will be manuscripts that you sit with for too long and you just endlessly tinkering. And, you know, you can't polish a turd. You can roll it in glitter, but it's still a turd. All right. We learn that, as particularly with picture book manuscripts, because they're short. And so because they're so short, we can get in this loop, this really toxic loop of overworking, overworking, overworking until the whole goddamn thing is unrecognizable. Or, you know, just thinking that somehow we can salvage something that's actually never going to work in the first place. Again, we can only learn this through experience. You know, we just got to get in there, get to the coalface and do the work, do the chipping away, looking for that diamond. And that will come through experience. So again, give them your best work. Give your publishers your best work, but understand that your best work doesn't have to be endlessly, endlessly polished until it's unrecognizable. Finding that fine line. Give them your best work, knowing that your best work will then go into an editing process where it will be fine-tuned, it will be manipulated to suit the market or to suit the publisher's list or to suit the illustrator. It's collaborative. It's collaborative. It's like writing a screenplay or a play and then, you know, the casting crew bring in actors that you never anticipated would be reading your work, and they bring a whole other level to it. They bring different nuances to it. They improve it. They bring it to life. And this is what publishers do with a picture book manuscript. And of course, they do it with all manuscripts. And there is a tendency, of course, to overwork novels and junior fiction stories and stuff like that. But it's way more sort of pernicious within the creation of a PB because you can do it over and over and over again because you're only working with about 500 words. So it can get pretty addictive. All right, so that's one thing that I wanted to mention to you today about your picture books. Give them your best, my love, because they're looking at other things rather than just the story. They're looking at your commitment, your talent, you know, they're looking at you, what you can do, what you can bring to the table, your skills, your love. We want to see some love come through in the work, you know. It's really obvious when someone loves the work, when they love the genre or they love the format. It just sings through in the work. Now, what was the other thing? Oh, so the other thing I was just thinking about while I was out walking, this is to do with more to do with novels. So this morning, the other thing that I shared in the duck pond was a new book that I've got. And I can't give a review. I never give reviews anyway, but I can't go in depth about this because I haven't read it yet. But I've read the opening sort of half a chapter and I really like it. I can tell I'm going to really like this book. And it's called Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts. And it's by Matt Bell. I'll put a link in the show notes. All right. It's a short book and it's really, It's really beautifully written. It's very sort of chatty and friendly, and it's just an easy read. And I also, the thing that I also like about it is clearly he's a pantser. So he's writing from the perspective of someone who, you know, writes by the seat of their pants, follows their nose, whatever you want to call it, rather than someone who plots and plans in advance and writes, you know, screen sequences and scene outlines and chapter outlines and all that sort of stuff. I'm not dissing any of these approaches. You know, like, seriously, I don't care how you write your story as long as you get your story written. There's, you know, there's often sort of friction and tension between pantsers and plotters, but I don't, you know, I've used both approaches, and both approaches have their merits, and, you know, both of them have their potholes. I prefer pantsing. If you've done my five ways to write a book, it's a free course that's on my website, a free mini e-course that you can do, five ways to write a book. In that, I talk about what has become my approach over the years, which is, I call it the Swedish chef approach, which is basically a bit of this and a bit of that, bidi bidi bidi. Okay, so I do a bit of plotting, I do a bit of pantsing, you know, I backwards and forwards, I backtrack, I plan ahead. I stop, I start. I just used the hummingbird technique as well. I use that. You know, I just do whatever I have to do to get the bloody story written. All right. But what I really love about this is that this book by Matt Bell is that he is a pantser. And he talks about, and this is the thing that I've taken so far from the book, the first draft, he calls it the discovery draft. How cool is that? Like, that just puts a light on for me. Oh my God, this is the discovery draft. You know, this is where you're discovering the story. You're discovering everything about the story. You're discovering the characters. You're discovering, even sometimes for me, you're discovering the bloody genre. Like, you haven't got a clue what you're writing. You're just following your nose. So that first draft, we can call our discovery draft. And that sort of relates back to what we were talking about today with the woman with the PB. You know, don't submit to a publisher your discovery draft. You know, a publisher is not, unless they know you really well as a writer, they're not going to recognize that this is a discovery draft. They're just going to think this is what you're capable of. And a discovery draft will not be something that you can sell off. You know, it's not going to be very convincing. And that's what I was saying this morning, and, you know, when we were all together, that even me, you know, I've made the mistake of submitting what should have been a discovery draft. You know, I made the mistake of submitting that to my publisher, you know, really late in my career, and then going, then looking back and thinking, oh, no wonder that didn't go down very well. It was a discovery draft. I didn't hold on to it long enough. I didn't do enough work on it. I didn't go deep enough with it. Okay? So if you can think, and even if you're a plotter, you know, even if you're a plotter, being a plotter gives this sense that you've got it all, you literally have got it all worked out in advance, and you're just so across everything. And really, that's bullshit, isn't it? Because even when you plot and plan, it's not as simple as filling in, you know, joining the dots. It's just not as simple as that. It's always backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards and rewriting and shifting and changing. So even for a plotter, you know, those first couple of attempts at writing the story, they're going to be your discovery draft, and that's not what you submit to your publisher, no matter where you're at in your career. You know, just because you shouldn't expect anybody to read something that's not going to be very entertaining, because it's going to be muddled and muddy, right? So, okay, now, the other thing that was spinning off that in my brain when I was out walking just now was I was thinking about some of the major things that you can tweak later, all right? So you write your discovery draft, knowing that you can come back in later and have a look at these. I've got three things I want to mention today, but there's more. There's way more. But there are three things in particular that I enjoy dressing. You know, I enjoy expanding on once I've got a substantial discovery draft written. It may not be the entire book, but at least, you know, a good amount of words, a good amount of chapters, say 30 or 40,000 words in, then I can look at it, I can get a bit better grasp of what's going on, and then I can go in and I can kind of think about these three areas. I can think about emotion, I can think about humour, and I can think about suspense. And if I have these three things in my brain, in forefront in my mind as I'm reading through my discovery draft, what I'm doing is looking for opportunities to add or flesh out or play with or strengthen or deepen these areas. So I'll be looking at emotions. I'll be looking at especially the protagonist. I'll be looking at hers or his or their emotions, and I'll be thinking, is this accurate? Would they really react in this way? They have just been through X, Y, and Z. Would they come out the other side, you know, blithely getting on with their day? Or would they stop here and feel what they've been going through and think about what they've been going through, speak about what they're going through, write about it, diary about it. Like, where can I go in this book with the emotions, and how can I get them to make sense and to be logical and have an inner logic to them, all right? And also, where can I deepen the emotion, explore the emotion a little bit more? So that's one area that I would be looking at after I've got that discovery draft down, which isn't to say I wouldn't be going there during the discovery draft, but you've got to look at your brain like, you know, it's like some sort of a complex clock. You know, there's a lot of cogs and wheels spinning when you're creating a story, and you're not going to be able to see, there's no way you can see everything straight off the bat. You just can't. All right. So there's some cogs will be kind of dormant. Some cogs will be just moving slowly. Some will be a bit rusty. All right. The whole clock of your story, this metaphor is getting really overused, is not going to work smoothly until you've put in a lot of time and looked at a lot of areas sort of in isolation. Okay, so that's one thing you can look at. You can go back and look at the emotions, see if they're uneven, see if they're illogical, see if they can be strengthened or deepened or played out more. Same goes for humor. You know, looking for opportunities, literally, you know, I sometimes go with a pen and on the hard copy and write, insert humor here. Or, you know, I just put an FU, which means follow up. All right, follow up. And I want to follow up here. I've seen an opportunity for some humor here. Or the humor that I've gone for is a bit boring. You know, it's a bit contrived, or it's not original. I want to go back and play with that humor a little bit more and give it a better voice, you know? So humor is another thing that that we shouldn't overlook and that we shouldn't expect to come straight away when there's so many, our eyes are on so many different things. We're juggling so much when we're writing those first discovery drafts. So humor is a thing that you can look for opportunities to expand on and play with and add originality to. And the third one that I wanted to mention today, my hair's all over my face from the wind. The third one I wanted to mention today is suspense. Sometimes we, don't get me started. Sometimes, often, we miss opportunities for suspense, okay? Because we kind of know what's coming. So we forget that, oh, hang on a minute, this is a suspenseful time for the character. I can't rush through this. Again, we may not notice that in the first draft, or we might linger too long or labour it too much. You belabour the point, you know, try to make it too suspenseful when actually it's not that suspenseful. It's all these dances that we do when we're writing. But again, suspense can be a thing that you look for after you've got that first discovery draft nutted out and written down on the page. You can go in and sort of like Sherlock Holmes and look for places where you can up the suspense, tighten the suspense, and indeed the same thing with drama. Heighten the drama. And like, you can even do this, it doesn't matter how big the story is. Like, this can be in a little 20,000 word junior fiction story. This has actually happened to me, you know. Like, I can remember a Danny Best story where my editor came back and said, hey Jen, what we could up the suspense here, you know. And I'm like, bing, light went on. Oh yeah, it's literally two sentences and suddenly it's a suspenseful scene, because within the context of, you know, a few thousand words, that's all you need is a couple of sentences. So isn't that fascinating? Like, seriously, there's just, I love it. I love this whole thing about writing and the backwardsing and forwardsing and toing and froing. And, you know, and I guess that's why a lot of people hate writing, because it requires a lot of patience, you know, to be shuffling all these things around on the board, and shuffling all these pieces around on the board can take a lot of patience and a lot of perseverance. And a lot of people don't want that. They want more, you know, the instant gratification that comes from other pursuits. But we writers do enjoy this sort of a juggle. It's very satisfying, because when you finally crack it, it's like, it's the best feeling. Like, it's just the best feeling when you finally crack it. So that's what I reckon you should do. Have a crack at writing a discovery draft, and then isolate some areas where you might want to fine tune and look a bit more closely. And, you know, like this week with me, I'm rewriting an entire part one of a novel. And not only am I looking at all these areas of emotion, humor, and suspense, but I've also changed everybody's names. Like, literally, I've changed everybody's, not just the protagonists, but everybody in the family, that all their names have been changed, because the story does not match the story that I started, you know, a year or two ago. It is mutated into something completely different, and it's much richer and much more satisfying. And I'm enjoying working on it so much more because I've got through that wonky, scary discovery stage, and I'm on firmer ground now, and I'm more confident. And so that's another thing that many of us have to work towards. I think some unicorns don't have to do that. And if you're one of them, I'm very jealous. But for a lot of us, we really have to work to that point. To that point of confidence, it takes time. So I'll be interested to see what comes up next in Matt Bell's book, because it talks about, it says in three drafts. So, but I'm not skipping ahead, because I'm not one of those people that skips ahead in books. I like to be fed things as the author intended, so I don't know what the second draft will be all about, but I'm enjoying this perspective of the discovery draft very, very much. Alrighty, I'm going to go and make myself a cup of coffee and get on with my day, and sending you so much love, and I want you to stay creative, and if you are part of the ducky community, I want you to stay quacky as well. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say is that I am running my junior fiction course again this month, August 2023. It'll be late August. So if you're interested in doing a four-week course with me, it's called, for want of a better name, 4 Weeks to Write a Junior Fiction Story. I want to be very clear about what the goal of this course is. So that's why I gave it such a clear and precise name. 4 Weeks to Write a Junior Fiction Story. The last time I ran it was March 2022, so clearly I don't run these courses very often. But if you want to get involved in that, just make sure you're on my mailing list, because I'll email everybody when it all goes live and when it's all happening. But it's a gorgeous course. It's a very, very popular course. Lots of people have done it and lots of people have loved it, and it's really, really good fun. So that's happening later this month. But otherwise, I'm going to chuff off now and send you loads and loads of love, and I'll see you again soon. Bye for now. Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want more ducky goodness, pop over to the website www.girlandduck.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Jen E. Storer, J-E-N-E-S-T-O-R-E-R. Bye for now.